Chapter 7. Values and Emotion. The affective system is chiefly associated with emotion. Emotions are commonly described as different kinds of feelings we have, feelings that we are consciously aware of. We can describe them in any language using a rich repertoire of words like English: down, low, gloomy, sad, contented, lethargic, lazy, elated, enthusiastic, energized, worried, nervous, or frightened. However, many now accept that emotional states can also go unnoticed in our subconscious. People can be depressed or jealous without realizing it. They can suddenly find themselves attracted to or suspicious of something for no good reason, while there is actually a reason that is currently hidden for them. Because being aware of having some feeling that has no obvious cause is disturbing, in order to resolve this dilemma, they can rationalize it. That is to say, they can ascribe a reason to their feelings which is not actually the real reason. Someone can be a convinced anti-racist but still be affected by subconscious biases that conflict with their consciously held beliefs. In fact, we are all inescapably biased in some way or other. This is a rich field for politicians and advertisers. They are well aware that they can manipulate people subtly and indirectly to adopt views and preferences to their political or commercial advantage, so that people, for example, become attracted to particular political parties or products on the market. Indeed, they can be manipulated in the opposite direction, making them suspicious and likely to avoid things that formerly did not bother them in any way. What is going on in those subconscious depths of the mind? Values. At the heart of these various emotions lies what is often referred to as appraisal. This refers to the way states, people, objects or events can be associated with a value that is either negative or positive. All emotions can be associated with one or other of these values. Appraisal is certainly something we frequently do consciously, evaluating from our point of view people, events, situations and ideas. This kind of conscious appraisal is carried out using the power of our conceptual system. However, appraisal is also something that is going on all the time in our subconscious mind, and its source is the affective and not the conceptual system. Often, as just suggested, there is a conflict between the two ways of appraising something or someone. There may be something that, after some conscious reflection, we have rated as positive and desirable, but deep down in the recesses of our subconscious minds, it may still be valued as negative and to be avoided. The inner conflict that this causes may make our behaviour seem to us inconsistent, irrational, or worryingly unpredictable. In the present account of the mind, we have chosen to see appraisal and emotion as part of the same affective system. Following on from this, positive and negative values are primitives in the affective system, a system that also handles basic emotions. Every basic emotion, like joy, anger, fear, disgust, will contain either a positive value or a negative one. Values are affective primitives, and so part of the affective biological starter set. Basic emotions are also primitives, but as described earlier, they are complex ones, because whatever other features they happen to be composed of, they all at least contain a negative or positive value as well. In the affective biological starter set, basic emotions are also part of primitive schemas that extend out to other systems. They are linked to representations elsewhere in the outer ring systems, and also to the motor system on the inner ring that controls the physical movements that occur when experience a given emotion. These ready formed networks of association mean that we are set up in advance of experience to respond to, for example, experiences that can be either attractive or threatening, not just emotionally, but with our bodies as well. The neural instantiation of basic emotional responses is usually understood to be centered on the limbic system, a set of structure in an evolutionary older part of the brain. So it is not surprising that we recognize similar emotional responses in other species by the way they react physically to given situations. This ancient brain system forms what you might call our basic survival resource. The same can be said of the mind's affective system. You may remember from the third chapter the example of ready-formed associations, i.e. the snake object example, where cats will respond defensively, even leap away from one, without prior experience of real snakes. The fear of snakes and spiders in so many humans provides further illustration of the same idea. There are two examples of an association between a representation in the affective system and one in another system that were given in the last chapter, and at this point in the text they are reproduced. The first simple association associates the concept of a particular taste, in other words a gustatory representation, with the simplest type of affective representation, namely a value, in this case a negative one. This informs the individual that the taste in question is bad and should be avoided. However, it is difficult to imagine a negative association not being accompanied by any emotional response at all. More typical would be the second association, which links the taste representation with the basic emotion disgust, which, like all basic emotions in the affective store, includes a value as part of its makeup, in this case a negative one. In this way, certain tastes may have an already formed negative starting value, a defense mechanism, in order to help the child avoid eating and drinking things that may be harmful. To reinforce the child's defences, avoidance action will be needed, so the simple two-way association will not be enough. So a big network of associations will usually be needed. This schema, the resulting schema, will certainly involve associations with the motor system, causing the child to withdraw from the source of the taste, and the resultant movements will often include the facial muscles around the nose and mouth contracting into a classic expression of disgust. In such cases, only experience and a subsequent change in value can change their instinctive preference and accompanying reactions. Addiction. Affective associations with other systems come in all shapes and sizes. Particularly striking is the case of addictive behaviour whereby even an initially unpleasant taste or smell, for example, is accompanied by unexpected pleasurable sensations. A neural account of this development would include a mention of the brain's reward system, involving the release of the neurotransmitter dopamine, and featuring a whole range of locations and pathways. Addictive behaviour is a complex phenomenon. Apart from the associations that are connected more directly to the rewarding physical sensations themselves, highly valued associations can also be formed between the circumstances that give rise to the rewarding experience. Such circumstances include the pleasurable socialising with other addicts that accompanies the direct expression of the addiction, but there are many more. These are often referred to using terms like psychological dependence or psychological addiction, but they are all ultimately physical phenomena and they all involve the affective system. Heart versus mind conflicts. Because of its role in associating values with practically anything else in the mind, the affective system represents a powerful force that influences our behaviour in all kinds of ways. Probably the most powerful force in the human mind. Our conscious reasoning ability, based on our conceptual system, and which we would like to think of as our strongest ally for coping with life, often seems to lose out when there is a conflict between what we like to think of as reason, on the one hand, and emotion, based on our affective system, on the other. The trouble is that What we like to think of as logical, rational thinking is in practice not an entirely independent ability, free of influence from the affective system. Rather, it is, as already mentioned, often biased, because our so-called objective reasoning is based on assumptions and beliefs that have already been given positive or negative values, and often subconscious ones at that. However logical the actual process of coming to some decision may be, like choosing a candidate in an election, or a partner, or a particular belief system, the rational basis of our decisions may well be questionable. This is because already existing assumptions and beliefs will lead us to highlight any supporting evidence and ignore and suppress awareness of disconfirming evidence when it is found to be a threat to mental stability and the quality of an individual's life. This is what cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, tries to disrupt. Therapists try in various ways to bring those underlying assumptions and beliefs into the open, in order for them to be challenged or changed. This is also what makes it particularly challenging to conduct a purely rational debate about opposing ideologies, be they political, philosophical, or religious. It is because, for the most part, individuals are not arguing on a level playing field. In so many cases, what are superficially purely rational arguments are weighted one way or the other. Some basic unspoken assumptions are held that turn out not to be shared between the participants. Politics is full of such exchanges between people. Each idea is presented in the debate, comes, as it were, with often undeclared affective baggage, such that the discussants may appear to be talking about the same thing in the same way, but in fact are not. Meanings and affect can be bound together so tightly that it led neuroscientist Joseph Ledoux to the suggestion that human beings at this present state of evolution that we are now in have yet to evolve a satisfactory balanced relationship between their emotional system and their rational ability. Heart and mind are still in a state of imbalance, and this may have negative consequences for both the individuals and all kinds of interactions between individuals, singly and in groups. We get to see this heart-mind imbalance most starkly amongst people in their teens and early 20s. The brain is actually not fully developed until the mid-20s, and the effect of emotion on behaviour may well be greater than in the mature adult, partly dependent, of course, on individual temperament. Higher degrees of irrational behaviour, mood swings and risk-taking can be relatively more prevalent amongst members of this particular age group. At this point in the text, you get a figure 10, which is the direct value and emotion connections displayed on the two inner rings. And what this focuses on is the affective system, which is marked A in the Metro map, and its connections with six other systems. It is in this network of direct connections that serves the basis for multiple schemas to be formed and get activated. You may notice that the two systems responsible for language structure do not have a direct connection with affect. This is a topic that will be returned to later in Chapter 11. Linguistic representations, nevertheless, can get coactivated as activation spreads from other ones, that is to say, other directly connected systems, for example, via an associated meaning in the conceptual system. The radiating connections that go out of the affective store across different systems in the mind show that the affective system, like the conceptual system, functions as a crossroads or hub for a multitude of associative networks, and it does this for the very simple reason that most representations will have a value that determines their current level of activation and competitiveness in any given online processing. This will be especially important in view of affective boosting. Affective boosting. Affect in the mind and the brain has a direct impact on our behaviour, acting through its various connections, as displayed in Figure 5 earlier on, including one not displayed, namely the motor system. When an affective representation that involves a positive or negative value is activated, the level of anything that is associated with that affective representation will get a boost as well. Although the boost that spreads across other associated representations will be uneven. Imagine an electric current suddenly emanating from the affect representation, the value, to anything else it happens to be associated with, and the resulting power surge across the schema in question. When strolling through some familiar and normally safe area, the sight, in other words, the visual representation of a tiger running in your direction, will trigger a particular version of what we could call a tiger schema. Experiences with tigers and the schemas that they evoke could be very varied, that is, varying from traumatic to, say, almost endearing when encountering a beautiful tiger, its eyes closed and fast asleep, safe in a zoo enclosure, for example. In the first case, the tiger rapidly approaching, a major surge will be transmitted to many representations, including some in your motor system, all of which will be part of a fight-or-flight response. Other affective features in the schema that may be activated along with the visual image and the concept of tiger might be associations such as the bright colours of the tiger's coat and the beautiful grace of its movements. These, however, will not be valued highly in the circumstances and therefore only weakly activated, if at all. Because of their survival value, the tiger-related associations that are strongest, i.e. have already very high resting levels, will be those that are most associated with danger and which trigger the basic negative emotion fear. As always, the context exerts a powerful influence on what gets activated and, in each case, how intense the activation will be. Another example of effective boosting used earlier that I will now repeat for convenience, but with a little more detail, was when you are in a busy room talking to someone with lots of chatter going on in the background. This has been called the cocktail party effect. You are concentrating on what someone is saying and ignoring the buzz of conversation around you. Despite the fact you have seemingly blanked out the background chatter and are attending to what one person is saying, when your ears pick up a mention by someone in the background of your name, suddenly your attention is switched to the source of that mention. This switch was not the result of any deliberate conscious intention, it happened automatically. Why? This was because the sound of your name is very important to you. Put another way, we can say that your name is highly valued. It means that your name and a value now share the same high resting level. When activated in your auditory system, the auditory representation, i.e. the sound of your name, will immediately be co-activated not only with its meaning, but with the whole network of associations as well, including the strong value representation. The boosting effect of this co-activated positive value will instantly spread increased levels of activation across the whole network. Before you picked up the sound of your name in the background, your conversation partner's voice was the most important sound for you. That means your mind has already associated a much higher value with this activated auditory representation, the sound of your name, compared with your current conversation partner's voice, and certainly with whatever else had been activated by the background chatter reaching your ears. This resulted in the sound, or rather the auditory representation of your name, suddenly becoming the dominant one. For a moment or more, your partner's voice takes second place. In this way, affective processing can play a major role in explaining what most people call your attention. You might say that attention is basically driven by changes in value. Basic and complex emotions. Many researchers in this area of affect like to make a distinction between basic or primary or core emotions on the one hand, these are different names for the same thing, and on the other hand, more complex ones like guilt. And we will keep this distinction here. The basic emotions have different labels in different languages, and their number varies according to which perspective researchers in this area adopt. Broadly speaking, they are the emotions that we see reflected not only in our behaviour, but also in other species, such as anger, fear, disgust, sadness, and joy. It is these basic emotions that are located in our affective store. They are affective representations. And they are combined with value, either positive or negative values. So they're complex. But more complex emotions, like jealousy, guilt, and pride, are probably combinations of these basic positive and negative emotions, and may also involve more than just the affective system. In this case, they would be manifested as schemas that associated the basic emotions, or some combination of basic emotions in the affective system, probably with additional conceptual meaning representations. This adds subtleties of meaning that add up to complex emotions, which may or not feature in the minds of fellow primates, possessing just the basic emotions in their affective systems. Still, it is also possible, even with other species, that some so-called complex emotions may be defined as the co-activation of more than one basic emotion just within the affective store. In other words, mixed emotions, such as anger together with fear, and different relative levels of intensity, meaning different levels of activation. Following what was said in earlier chapters, activating any of these emotion representations, like fear or joy, will create sensations of which an individual will be aware. They will have a particular feeling, but their significance as far as an individual's mind is concerned is not established until meanings get to be associated with the feeling in question. This happens via the connecting pathway, the interface between the affective system on the one hand and the conceptual system on the other. In this way, other species, say a dog, may experience the same basic emotion as a human, for example, joy, and physically respond to this feeling in easily observable ways, but only the human will understand this feeling as joy, as opposed to some other emotion. This allows a human to recognize and reflect on the emotions they are feeling, as when they reflect, I haven't felt this happy for a long time, or why am I feeling so depressed right now? That doesn't seem to be an obvious reason. As far as we know so far, very few, if any, of our fellow species, that is, perhaps, some other primates, have the conceptual ability that humans have. Summing up, emotions are always associated with other representations in other systems. Most obviously, this includes the somatosensory, bodily, and motor associations. However, conceptual associations with emotions permit ever more subtle labels to be added, and are used to distinguish a whole variety of complex emotions. Note that animal lovers like to freely ascribe complex emotions and what causes them to their pets, as for example, it or she is feeling jealous, or he's so guilty because he knows he shouldn't have done that. This is very easy to do, but we have no idea whether it correctly describes the animal's emotional states. The network of associations that have been triggered could just create the sense of threat connected with the presence of another animal, or a feeling of wrongness without any understanding of exactly why the threat is being experienced. Humans have, for meaningful complex emotions, developed many identifying representations in their conceptual systems, typically with names for them in given languages. At the same time, it is always possible for people to experience a complex emotion for which their particular language, or any language, has no label. Furthermore, whether we have a word for a particular emotion or combination of emotions that have been activated, we will only become aware of them once the activated affective representations have attained a sufficiently high level of activation to trigger that awareness. Prior to that, they will be active in the underground part of our mind, the subconscious, but perhaps already influencing our behaviour in ways that we will not at that time appreciate. Individual differences. By now, it will have become clear that individuals, even if they were internally identical at birth, had exactly the biological starter set with all resting levels set exactly to the same level, so the strength of their instinctive responses were all also the same. Even then, every moment of their lifetime experience will shape them in different ways. Note that as described thus far, the basic set of cognitive systems are the same, and they should all work according to the same principles that identify us as members of the human species, and not any other. Nevertheless, the chances of any two minds being identical, even in identical twins, are infinitesimal. The point is all the more compelling, given that most of us do not even seem identical. The biases that are usually already present in each individual starter set, whether they turn out to be life-enhancing or disadvantageous, ensure that we are all truly individuals, for better or worse. We still have our own particular biological settings. After that, it depends on life experience, especially via upbringing and education, whether the original settings can somehow be attenuated or enhanced. Chapter summary. It appears in conclusion that the fact that our affective system is so richly interconnected with other parts of our mind means that we cannot really treat feeling and logical thinking as entirely separate. Emotions are an integral part of the whole, in other words, of our interconnected mind, and they play a vital role in explaining who we are and how we think and behave. The basic emotions are often associated with the traditional limbic system in the brain, which covers, in terms of evolution, older, more primitive area in the brain, and includes the amygdala, which is often cited in neuroscientific studies of emotion. Nowadays, we must assume that simple identification of emotions with one particular brain area is never the complete story. If the common distinction between basic and complex emotions still holds water, then the involvement of the conceptual system in the more complex emotions will be reflected in the activation in the brain of an even wider network of neural connections, that's to say the brain's equivalent of representational schemas in the mind, than those confined strictly to the limbic system. The importance of the affective system in explaining not just how we as individuals feel, but how we think cannot be underestimated. Accordingly, like the conceptual system, it will get involved in practically every discussion of how the mind works. The clearly defined distinction between heart and mind, or between emotion and reason, has become impossible to sustain, even in our imagination and in fiction, where characters struggle to decide between two options, one the so-called sensible, logical choice, and the other one guided completely by the emotions. This topic will crop up again in a later chapter, when more mysterious connections between the mind and body are discussed. Thank you.